This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 301 for Wednesday, January 9th, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight for the first time in a very long time, Mr. Stephen Sharky Schwenard. Hello, sir.
Hey, Joel. How's it going?
Not too bad. You and I have hung out recently. You came over to my place for a little Christmas get-together last month, but it has been a really long time since I've had you on the podcast.
It's only happened once before, and it was after the first of the new Star Wars movies came out.
Yeah. I was thinking about, like, I looked it up because I was curious, because I was like, did I have you on for, like, the first Trollhunter series? Or, like, I couldn't remember, but I think you and I have just talked about all kinds of stuff over many a car ride over the years.
Yes, true.
So it's kind of hard to remember what I've talked about on the show with people and what I have talked about, just, you know, water cooler talk, you know, at different places. I feel like I now, having passed 300 episodes, have got a very good excuse to just not remember.
Congratulations, by the way. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. And thank you to everybody out there that sent little notes of congratulations and expressed their like for the 300 episodes. We had a lot of people chime in on various platforms, whether it was Instagram or Facebook or wherever people hung their social media hat. And it was nice. It was nice to hear. And it was really fun to have Brockett and Ryan and Lou and Megan all under one podcasting roof for a little bit, because they've been podcasting with me for years in some cases, but not very often do they get to podcast with one another. Megan, for example, was her first time speaking with Brockett and Lou, and so that was really fun, especially because in the main show, once Lou and Ryan had to kind of move on, Megan and Brockett are both really into comics and like DC and Marvel and stuff. So I knew that we were going to have a really good, you know, a really good show. And I thought it was a fun episode, and it was nice for what with that many people on one podcast, I didn't have to talk nearly as much. So it was kind of cool to kind of like lean back and do a little bit more hosting than really participating and stuff. It was fun. It was a nice change of pace. I do want to try to have more than one person on the show more often. I do find that it's a fun dynamic to have like two to three other people with me, because I think that's fun. So maybe for like special events, you know, like when, for example, when Avengers Endgame does come out later on this year, then that will be a fun, I think, event to get a bunch of people together to go see it, and then, you know, do a podcast, you know, within the next week or so.
It'd be interesting to do almost a podcast right afterwards, but I understand what you're saying. Have a week to let it digest would be good as well.
Yeah, you kind of want to digest, and sometimes you want to see what other people are thinking, because I've had situations where I've come out of a movie not liking it, but then I've read reviews where they've not necessarily changed my mind, but they've dialed me back from like fury to acceptance but dislike, you know, like it kind of dials me down a little bit sometimes. If you're talking with the right people, depending on what internet flame war you're looking at, they can be swinging one way or the other. But I don't think that Endgame is going to be something that drops the ball. I don't think people are going to be disappointed. We talked about this on the 300 episode. I don't think it's going to be an all hunky-dory happy ending. I think some people are not going to make it, but that's up to speculation, and it could be anybody. Like, you really don't know.
I've been wondering the same thing, actually. It doesn't seem to be a series that wants to put this neat and tidy bow on the entire package. So I'm kind of echoing your sentiment there.
I'm okay if people end their careers as Avengers. You know, like if Tony Stark walks away and says, "That's enough. I need to stop. You know, I'm gonna finally listen to Pepper and I'm gonna just settle down." Then I'm fine with that. But I don't want like main lovable characters to die, right? Because that doesn't leave a good feeling. Even if it's they saved the world, it's still not a good feeling, you know? So
yeah, exactly.
Because I've recently watched Infinity War for like the third or fourth time now. It's on Netflix in Canada. And I watched it this past weekend just because I wanted something action-packed that I knew was good. I didn't want to have to take a gamble on something I didn't recognize on Netflix. And I say it every time I watch it, it's a great movie, but the last act is not a feel-good last act. Like, you definitely walk away from that going like, man, I don't know if I want to be a superhero. It might suck. Like, it might not be great.
And Thanos' plight is not actually one you can 100% argue with.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Like, why am I siding with the bad guy to a degree?
I hear you. I get more and more respect for how they wrote Thanos and how he was portrayed in that movie every time I watch it, because he's so soft-spoken. Like, he can be evil. He's definitely a bad guy. But it's just that he just goes about it as it like, no, this is just my reality. This is just what I have accepted. And he doesn't act insane, because to him it's normal.
Yeah.
And I find that scarier, actually, rather than some over the top villain that's always screaming and yelling and, you know, fire coming out of his eyeballs. Like, I find that kind of stuff is a little bit more intimidating, just because it's like, this is something that this guy believes in wholeheartedly.
Yeah, it's a calm rationality behind it. So it's,
yeah, precisely.
I've only actually watched it once, but my family, we're working our way through all of the Marvel movies to work our way up to the ones that are coming out this summer. So,
oh, nice.
What did we just watch? Oh, we just actually watched the first Avengers, and that was I hadn't seen that one in a long time. That was a fun ride again.
Oh yeah, no, that's got some epic moments in it. I still get goosebumps when the helicarrier takes off for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The music in that film was spot on.
Agreed. Yeah. No, there's so much in it that was just really good. And you know, I've forgotten how good Mark Ruffalo introduced as the Hulk, or how good he was. He's been on it for a while now, obviously, and it's obvious as why they chose him and kept him. He's just so good as the Hulk.
Yeah, no, I agree. I have to say, though, the split personality thing that he's going through with Hulk in Infinity War, not my favorite. It's not my favorite thing. I kind of like the idea. I like the idea of Ruffalo being able to control the Hulk, like, as to when he unleashes it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that he was in this, like, 2 year or 3 year rage in Ragnarok, and so that he wasn't Banner for a very long time. But there's something that kind of sucks the wind out of my sails when he can't turn into the Hulk, or the Hulk doesn't want to come out. I don't know. It doesn't seem, it's not as interesting. I'm okay with having villains be stronger or as strong as the Hulk to pose a threat. For example, I got caught in a YouTube rat hole yesterday or the day before, and I was looking up. Oh man, I can't even remember the character's name. He's one of the children of Thanos. He is the guy in Infinity War that stabs Vision for the first time, and Vision can't phase through the blade. He's got this glaive. Clawglave or Warglaive is his last name. It's kind of on the nose. I'm sure the nerds out there will correct me, but they were talking about him and his power and how powerful a character he is and things that were left out of the movie. And in the comics, his life force is tied to his weapon. So if his weapon survives, he can potentially survive. And as far as I remember, his weapon wasn't destroyed in the film. So he could potentially be coming back in Endgame. But in describing this weapon and how powerful it is, they were saying that it is the only weapon, or one of the only weapons in the universe, that has drawn blood from the Hulk, because it can slice atoms. And because of how the Hulk was created, with like an atomic accident, so he can actually cut the Hulk, which I thought was really interesting. But
so do you know Hulk's backstory from the comic perspective? Just from the movies, more or less.
So in the comics, it was gamma rays, and then they spun it sort of like that in the films, but in the Marvel universe, they've only really kind of hinted at it because there's already been two other movies. and so they kind of just like hint, like, yeah, you know, there was a, you know, radioactive accident, blah, blah, blah. They kind of glaze over it in a kind of like a tongue in cheek joke way. So I don't really remember, but essentially
we just watched the Avengers though. And it was essentially, they talked about, it was, they did mention the gamma rays in this sense, I guess. Let me back up a second. They positioned Hulk coming to be because he was trying to reproduce the serum that made Captain America Captain America, and he thought that it was gamma radiation was going to be the key to make it stick.
Right. And
I don't know, and I was curious to know if you knew if that was from the comics
that's,
as well.
That's come up a couple of times, and I think that that's probably the comics. Well, the original Hulk is probably just gamma rays. Like, just, I don't think it's tied to Steve Rogers at all. When you're talking about, right, like the Hulk in the 70s, but if you're talking right, about like some of the newer comics with like where you get Infinity War and the Skrulls and, you know, Captain Marvel and all that kind of stuff, I feel like they do tie it to the super serum. But in one of the films, it's not Banner. It was Banner's dad. And then Banner's dad injected himself, but then it didn't work in Banner's dad, but he passed it on to his son, and his son didn't know that he had the super serum in him genetically. So then when he was exposed to gamma rays, it was the combination of like having this gene inside of him. And so like it gets really complicated, and I'm not enough of a Marvel comic head to know, but if somebody out there is listening and can set us straight on like the original Hulk versus the, you know, cinematic universe Hulk origins, then hey, have at it. The thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. I'd love to know for sure. And I'm sure I could, you know, Google it afterwards as well. But it'd be really cool to see the comparisons and what people think. I like the way that they portrayed it in the films with Ruffalo. Like, I like that he can just be like, I'm always angry, and just kind of turn it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you might remember this from Ultron, but they have to figure out, and they develop a way to then calm him down and put him back in the cage. And I like that he can't turn it off at will. Like, somebody else has to turn the off switch, but he can turn the on switch. Like, I enjoy that that dynamic. But one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is because you and I, over the holidays, both watched a new animated series on Netflix called Three Below, Tales of Arcadia. And I've mentioned Trollhunters before, both one and seasons one and two on the Citadel Cafe. And I didn't realize that this is part of a trilogy. So we'll get into some spoilers in a little bit, but for now, just to keep it spoiler-free, Three Below is a Guillermo del Toro production in association with Netflix and DreamWorks, and as is Trollhunters. And there's a third show called Wizards that's coming out this year. And this is a three-part or three-show trilogy where you've got Trollhunters, Three Below, and Wizards. And they're all set around or have overlapping characters in Arcadia, which is the town where Trollhunters takes place. And I was impressed. I didn't realize that they were going to start spin-off series.
After watching the first season of Trollhunters, you mean?
Well, even with Trollhunters and Trollhunters season 2, I didn't get the impression there was going to be spin-offs.
Oh, I think I knew because I was just looking up some trivia on Trollhunters, and I think it was because they started referring to Trollhunters as Trollhunters Tales of Arcadia. I forget where it came up, whether it was mentioned as the new title of season 2.
Right.
Or maybe it was season 3, because as you and I chatted earlier, I watched season 3 before you did. But I knew there was something that was different because they weren't just calling it Trollhunters anymore. And so then when I went to look it up, I knew that it was going to be Three Below, but I didn't know the name Wizards originally. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's kind of odd too, because when you look at Trollhunters, Wizards, they kind of both evoke a certain archetype, you know, like it's a fantasy, even if it has like a modern spin where it's modern kids that are hunting trolls underneath their town, it still has that kind of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons fantasy kind of feel to it. But
right,
the Three Below isn't called Aliens or Space Royalty, or, you know, like the Three Below is a really different name compared to the other two. So I wasn't sure that it, like what it was about and how it was going to tie in. But I mean, for the way that they kind of roll it out is that you've got Trollhunter seasons 1, 2, and 3 all happen. I don't want to say before, but you're supposed to watch all three of those before you watch Three Below. There is a crossover, and events in Three Below season 1 happen at the same time as Trollhunter season 3, but the crossover is minimal. The only thing that I'll say is that there are definitely some visual spoilers in Three Below if you watch that before Trollhunter season 3, which is what I did. Just because I was excited. Right. I was just excited for sci-fi stuff. And when you get to the end, basically the epic end of Three Below, like the two-parter end of the season, happens at the exact same time as the two-parter end of Trollhunter season 3. So it, like, characters are going by and you're like, oh wow, that's, you know, and so you see all this stuff happening at once in both series. And I mean, I didn't really care about spoilers in season 3 for Trollhunter, so I went into it knowing I might get a little bit spoiled, but surprisingly not as much as I thought. Like, there was some, but nothing terribly upsetting, I guess. You know, no plot points. It was just visual stuff, you know, kind of reveals.
I guess without getting into spoilers, they do actually see Jim in the final episode, and that,
yes,
is a potential spoiler. If you haven't seen Trollhunter, I feel like that's something you would be good to see Trollhunters 3, 4
yeah,
first, yeah, and then see.
Yeah. The other thing that they do very well, although I would say they've done better with the inter-episode teases than they did with the Three Below, but in, I think it was season 2 in Trollhunters, where at some point, I think his name is Steve, and
yeah,
what's the little nerdy kid's name? I don't remember.
Eli.
So they go off on their own adventure on one episode. But there's an episode with all the main characters in Trollhunters, and Eli and Steve go by in a truck, and it is the weirdest, like, it is there for like 2 seconds, and it is like, everybody's going, what the hell? And they explain nothing. The rest of the episode, they give you nothing. And then the following episode, you get to follow Steve and Eli and find out exactly what happened. And it was brilliant. It was such good storytelling. I loved it. And
it was probably my 2 favorite episodes in the entire show. I mean, and that's saying a lot, because I thought the entire 3 seasons were very strong, but those 2 yeah, were just, they're so good. Yeah. And I mean, if you're a fan of How to Train Your Dragon and the TV, Netflix TV series, I'm going to mess it up. I think it's Race to the Edge, but yes, they play board games in that Blinky and Arg are playing in Trollhunters, and there's actually a silver mace in the basement that Toughnut has How to Train Your Dragon, named Macy. So there was, like, we saw season 3, there was all kinds of little How to Train Your Dragon Easter eggs placed all over the place, which is really pretty special, because we love the How to Train Your Dragon series.
Yeah, that's cool. I watched the movies, but not the TV show. But yeah, like I love it when shows can do stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, they're actually watching on the laptop in the background, and I think it's episode 1 of season 1, Trollhunters. Jim has How to Train Your Dragon playing on his laptop.
Oh, in the background. I do remember that. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what the great things that can happen when DreamWorks and Netflix own all the series, right? Like, they could, because they've produced, exactly, now 3 and 4 and, you know, 3, 4 series together. More than that, because I think there's a Trolls TV show and there's a Snails TV show.
Voltron
too. Yeah, geez, that's right. Oh, there's, yeah, like 7 or 8 now, which is good, because it's the best place for it. Like, I've been saying it time and time again how much I enjoy Netflix original content, but Netflix original animated content is really good. It's really good. Mm-hmm. Much better than stuff that I've seen on TV, because I don't have cable and I haven't watched, like, cartoons on television in a long time. But the stuff that I see and like, and the stuff that I hear people raving about, it's all Netflix, DreamWorks, or Netflix with somebody else. You know, like, it's a combo. thing. And I think it's, you know, it's the idea that you don't have to cater to network television. You don't have an exec telling you what to put in your cartoon, what you can and can't put in your cartoon, which actually we'll get into in just a little bit here with Three Below. Mm-hmm. Now that we've got that out of the way, I mean, people can go and watch it and watch Trollhunters. I would say watch Trollhunters first and then watch Three Below, just because of some of the potential spoilers. But I really enjoyed it. It's a good series. I'd say it's a little bit older than Trollhunters. You've got kids. What would you say would be the age range? I believe it was PG-13 on Three Below for the rating on Netflix.
I don't recall. I would say it's comparable to Trollhunters. It was, because I mean, there are battle scenes in Trollhunters. There are troll characters who die.
Yeah.
And in this one, there are alien characters, and so these alien characters, I don't recall offhand if any of them pass away or not, but it's just, I felt like it was on the same level, but it's hard to say because my boys started watching Trollhunters, you know, two and a half years ago. So now that we're watching Tales of Arcadia, it's a great age for them. So yeah. I guess I can't, it's hard for me to say because Trollhunters was a great age for them 2.5 years ago, and Three Below is a good age for them right now.
Yeah, it says, I'm looking, just a quick internet search says ages 10 plus for both. And I can see that. Like it's not Disney princesses. Like it's got a little bit more grit to it. There's no blood and guts, which is nice, and they get around that in very clever ways. But it's still sword fighting and there's peril and there's a lot of talk of death in Three Below and murder and things like that. So like if you have a really young kid, you might have some questions to answer as you watch the show. And there's also some slightly more, I don't want to say adult, but more like, you know, grown up themes that kind of come up. But all that said, I would highly recommend it. You can be your own judge, you know, as if you watch a couple episodes and you think it's fine for your 8-year-old, then hey, go for it. But we're going to get into spoiler territory now. So if people have not watched it and, want to avoid that kind of stuff, we're going to try not to spoil plot stuff, but there are some things that we want to talk about that would be, revealing a little bit too much, I think, because there are some very, very funny moments that I would hate to spoil for people. So tune out now if you don't want to have some spoilers. But I want to throw it to you, Stephen, because where you've got boys that are just like the prime age for this kind of stuff. Like, what was the overall takeaway from Three Below?
Overall, the boys really loved it, and I think they liked it more than I did. And I honestly think that was partially because I really quite liked Trollhunters. I don't really think back at Trollhunters and go, yeah, it was great, except there are these weak moments in it that I didn't really care for. I mean, as we mentioned earlier, the Voltron's also a Netflix show that we watch, and the previous season in Voltron, they had one filler episode called The Feud, where it was basically they were on this game show for the entire thing, and the plot moved forward not a lick. And it ended and we just looked at each other in disbelief. It was so disappointing because we enjoy Voltron, but looking back at Trollhunters, I can't think of any point in it that made me go, yeah, that's made me question watching it. Whereas Three Below, I actually felt like it took a while to kind of find its footing. I guess the first episode I enjoyed. It was kind of an intro to everything and the characters. But then it felt like episodes 2, 3, 4, and maybe even 5 were almost all the same show.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were, you know, there's no surprise if you look up the theme at all for the show. These extraterrestrials crash on Earth. And so in that crash, their ship gets damaged. And so they're looking for parts. And I think it's the first 5 episodes, they're looking for parts. And
yeah.
After a while, it felt like, all right, well, let's kind of move the plot forward, please. And I had a feeling, or I knew it was going to overlap with Trollhunters at some point. But when the Trollhunters characters finally showed up, I actually started to enjoy it more. And I mean, I know you mentioned it wasn't one of your favorite episodes. I think, what was that one called?
That's the Deja Vu episode. And
right.
The reason I didn't like Deja Vu had nothing to do with the Troll Hunter crossover. It was actually, I was just mad that the Troll Hunter crossover happened in such a sci-fi tropey episode. It's a time travel episode. Like it's the episode of Star Trek that everybody hates, you know, like it's because you've got to watch the same 15 minutes of the show over and over again as the characters relive the exact same moment with subtle changes that don't happen until the end of the, you know, in this half an hour TV show, it's like a 3 minute segment, but it's like, it's not until the last millisecond of that 3 minutes that you get the little inch that they move the plot forward for the show. And you're like, oh gosh, come on.
Yeah.
Like it gets tedious. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's not that I disagree with you. I felt like it was the first episode that felt different. Because even though the plot didn't move forward, you have the first episode, which introduced everything well enough. And then, like I said, the next few were all the same. And then this one, at least they were looking for a part again and again, but it was had a different spin to it. But either way, and then after that, I felt like it took off fairly well.
Yeah, and I've noticed that with when Lou and I were talking about Troll Hunter season 2, and I had this in my head going into watch both Troll Hunter season 3 and 3 Below, and that is Troll Hunter season 2 had a really rough start. Like it was forced jokes, it was weak writing, like it didn't really land. And then in the second half of season 2, it really hit a stride. It was all about driving the main plot forward. It was an arc that lasted like the 6 episodes right to the end. There might have been some little subplots, but it was mostly like one big story. So I thought, well, no matter what, I've got to give 3 Below, you know, at least 3 or 4 episodes, you know, to kind of push it, you know, and make a judgment call. And that's why the fourth episode. Funny. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it seems that you're making me go back on my words here because I had totally forgotten about the beginning of season 2.
Yeah.
And I think you and I chatted about it. It was almost like they had different writers.
They did.
And then somebody came in and said, okay, we need to fix this. And then took over and made the rest of the... Oh, they did actually have?
Yep. So they had the first... I can't remember exactly, but it was the first 3 to 4 episodes of season 2 of Troll Hunters had something stupid like 6 writers on every episode. And then the last half of the series of the season was like the same 2 people running each episode, and it was like the showrunners or something. It was like somebody said, "Here, you two fix this," and they just went and fixed it, right? And that's you'll find that's something that happens. AC Bradley and Leela Scott are 2 names that come up over and over and over and over again in the second half of 3 Below. They start at episode 6, which is Deja Vu, and then 7, 8, 9, 11, 13, like they're in there 100%, right? And the reason why the first 2 episodes I think do so well is because they're written by Del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
So, cause that almost plays as a mini movie, right? Like that's like an hour long. It's like a 45 minute, 2-parter, at the start.
Right.
I think something that they do well and this is where Netflix sings is that they introduce some pretty funny but also poignant social commentary like right away. So
yes,
the prince and princess, which is the brother and sister, which is Aja and what's his name, I can't remember. Krell.
Krell,
yeah, so Krell and Aja are the 2 main characters, boy and girl. And then there's Nick Offerman does Varvatos Vex, who's their protector. So they have to be disguised when they're on Earth. And so the mothership gives them these holographic or some sort of technological disguises that fade after like 12 hours or something. But they disguise.
At the beginning, that's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, so they disguise Aja as a teenage girl, Krell as a teenage Latino, and Vex as an old man. And say, hey, this will make you completely invisible to society. And it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, those are almost the exact words. I think Mother goes, we've chosen three peoples that we believe will help, that go largely ignored in society.
Something like that, yeah.
Latino boy and a senior citizen. So it was, and it's little moments like that where it kind of hit me as I'm watching these with my sons. And so those are little teachable moments where you hit pause and go, okay, this is what they're saying at this point.
Yeah.
And so it's,
Yeah. Did
And there's a
they grasp that? Like, were they able to? Did they get there on their own, or did you have to explain it?
I, to be honest, I don't know because we just hit the pause as soon as it was said and said, hey, just so you know, this is what they're saying. It's an unfortunate reality and it's not cool. So, but then we also paused it later on with the one of the later episodes where Krell is having that sort of math contest
Oh, yes.
with the other student where that other student's father is kind of takes the more blatantly racist
Yes.
road. And I forget exactly how he worded it, but Krell being disguised as a Hispanic boy said something to the fact, something to the effect of someone like him shouldn't be that good at math.
Right.
And I could tell that was, it was an awkward, not really awkward, but it's a good opportunity to clarify things with the boys again.
Yeah,
But I was surprised at how straightforward and, they weren't sugarcoating it at all. They're just, there's a guy who just clearly has an issue with the
And
non-Caucasian Americans.
yeah, and they soften it just ever so much by he calls Krell, I think they referred at some point they refer to him as an alien, meaning like an immigrant, like an illegal alien. And Krell just goes, well, yeah, of course I am, because he's talking about being an actual alien, right? So they insert like little bits of humor to soften it, but they also, what I found really interesting about that particular situation with the with that kid's dad is that the kid is kind of he's mean, like he's a bit of a bully, and he doesn't like being outshone by Krell, but very quickly they show you that this kid isn't mean. He's lashing out from being under pressure from his not overprotective, overbearing
Bearing, yeah.
father who's micro-parenting, right? And trying to get like his kid has got to get like top grades. And so not only is the guy racist, but then he's also this kind of a parent. He's a helicopter parent or overbearing. And so you realize that the kid isn't bad. So I felt like if the dad was racist and the kid was just an asshole, then there would be no reprieve there. But because in that storyline they show what the kid is going through, and that Krell then makes a decision to then throw the math contest and let the kid win because space camp sounds cool. He wants the kid to go to space camp. Like I think.
He's been there already, so
Yeah, exactly. He's like, I've been to space. Space is cool. Space camp sounds like a good place. And he breaks it down into such simple basics. Like it, and it, the lessons in that show, in that episode, are just like tenfold. It's like you don't have to win to win, right? Like you don't have to cross the finish line first to have it be to do the right thing. You know, like it really covered a lot of moral ground, which I really appreciated. And that's the kind of thing where at first, I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of on the nose. But then they put some more subtlety into it, which I really appreciated. And I, like, again, like, I thought the joke about, like, these three characters are, invisible to most humans in society. I thought that was kind of obvious. But I did enjoy, when they talk a lot about, like, girl power and, like, it's okay to do this or, girls can shine and all this kind of stuff later on. But they do it in a much more subtle way. Like they don't pause the whole episode and make sure it's just all about making sure that Aja feels, accepted or proud or whatever. It's something that she's just doing on her own because that's just the way that it is on their home planet. Like men and women can just totally do equal roles. And so she just rolls through Arcadia like this is totally the thing to do. And so she's setting an example, and you're seeing the other like secondary characters, like Toby's girlfriend, and I can't remember the quote unquote popular girl who's always on her cell phone.
Oh,
But
right.
they get starstruck because of how strong a character that Aja is. And I think that's a nice way to do it. Like Aja's just being herself and being a strong, independent character, and then she's getting friendships and respect and fun and all that kind of stuff out of it, as opposed to having her do some sort of like dialogue where she has to say like almost at the camera, "Look, it's okay to be a girl," And I think they handled that much better than some of the more on the nose stuff. But I mean, the show we're making it sound very serious. The show is silly. Like, it is really over the top silly in a lot of ways.
It is. I mean, that's what it is primarily. It just has these things peppered throughout, which is, I guess, unusual for a show of its lighthearted nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it was worth mentioning because it's...
Yeah. 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 Well, and we led into it because of the whole, like, you know, age appropriate sort of conversation.
Right.
But I mean, there's also some fun, the stuff that's in there. Like, I howled by myself at almost everything that the dog did. What's the dog's name? Puke or Purg or... It's similar to Booger or something like that. Like, he's got, I'm gonna have to look it up on IMDb, but he's got a really Lug, L-U-U-G, like a loogie. Right. It's this dog that looks kind of like a corgi, but when he's in an alien form, he's got like a mouth that opens kind of like a face hugger, and he's got this long purple tongue. But like this dog is just always like sucking on people's faces or like doing these really inappropriate things. And there was one point in one of the first episodes where they have to all disguise. And of course they change this Lug alien dog thing into a corgi. And there's a couple of points where he's a dog. So he's not controlling his actions much like the aliens are. They're also pretending to be human as well as looking like one, but the dog just does his own thing. He just looks like a corgi. So there's a couple of points where his head spins like 360, like an exorcist, and freaks a couple people out. And then at one point he goes up to a fire hydrant. And you just think, oh yeah, okay, cool. He's going to be doing a dog thing. Well, doesn't a laser beam come out of his ass and completely cut the fire hydrant in half? And like, I was not prepared for it. I lost my mind. I thought it was the funniest thing I'd seen in ages in a cartoon. And they do that Warner Brothers kind of slapstick stuff throughout the whole series very, very well.
Yeah. There's a couple points where I guess I totally thought it was a funny character, but I felt like they kept... For me, this episode, the show, I find there's a couple of things in it where, again, really enjoyed it, but it felt like they were using that sort of butt laser joke too frequently as this... series went on.
Yeah, there was an episode later on where it was like, okay guys, I get it. It was very funny the first time, but
yes,
in episode 12 or 11 or whenever I think Vex is actually holding him like a gun, like that was a little bit over the top.
Yeah, speaking of Vex, that's another one
yeah,
I could have probably used about 50% less Vex.
I'm so glad that you feel that way, because this was probably my biggest gripe with the show. And I feel like we're coming down on the show heavily at the first, but we're getting all the gripes out of the way.
Exactly.
The character of Varvatos Vex, voiced by Nick Offerman, he's over the top. He's this military commander turned into their protector, because when their parents are murdered, he escapes with them, and so he vows to protect the prince and princess, or king and queen in waiting, as they're called in the show. And but he speaks in the third person, and he does it all the time, and he does it in a way that's over the top, and it never ends.
Yeah, and at first I was going to cut him some slack, because I thought that it might be one of those things where he linguistically couldn't help refer to himself in the third person.
Exactly.
But his sentences aren't consistent. Like, he'll switch back and forth between Vervato Vex feels this is what he should do, or and then a couple sentences later he would say something, you know, something similar, where Vervato Vex feels that Vervato Vex should punch the human in the face, kind of thing. So some sentences he would use his name twice, and then some of them he would switch back and forth. So it kind of quickly learned that it's not a linguistic thing. It's just that's his choice, and it's, yeah. I think even if his character didn't refer to himself as the third person, it would have made me like him significantly more.
Absolutely, yeah. It's one of those tropes similar to the time travel or the insect infestation episode, where it's just like, okay, I've seen this 1,000 times in every other sci-fi property everywhere, so like, give it up, you know. And this is the same thing. Like, there's always that the character that refers to themselves in the third person in most modern films now is in it for a nanosecond, and every other character rolls their eyes at them, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit, like, for example, a way that they're doing it right, even though he's not always my cup of tea, is Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, he doesn't refer to himself in the third person, but he has that weird, like, he doesn't understand sarcasm, or he doesn't understand metaphor or something like that. So he's very literal all the time. So he doesn't speak in an annoying way, but the stuff that he says is really odd. And so that's just kind of part of his charm, if you like that kind of humor. But that, and that's where I think they could have gone something better with Varfota's Vex, where they could have just gone with, have him be that over the top warmonger, like, rah, I will rip your face off like an Arduinian slug, you know, like all the made up words that make cartoons and sci-fi fun. But instead of, but have him refer to himself just as a normal, like speak like a normal person, because I think that that's really, where they lost it, you know, because the other extreme, of course, to bring up Guardians of the Galaxy again is Groot, right? Mm-hmm. He only ever says one sentence, but they work it into the story and the dialogue so that you know exactly what he meant every time. And it's really, really good. And I think that they tried, and it did, I noticed, and they got some points for effort, is that when Vex later in the show is talking about his family or making very heavy decisions, he stops and refers to himself in the first person.
Right. Which made that moment more poignant, I guess.
Exactly.
More significant. But it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think... Yeah.
But I think the same thing could be achieved from just a simple acting shift, as opposed to being over the top and verbose all the time, to being more subtle, soft-spoken, right? Like, you can still do that without having to switch from the third person to the first person.
At the same time, though, I did... most times he showed it glorious, I actually thought it was pretty funny. There's some really weird moments or weird things that I found he yelled glorious at, which I got a good chuckle out of.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's
sometimes
just,
it was too many times in one episode, but I actually preferred him yelling glorious to referring to himself in the third person.
Yes. And I think that it's when they used it in the right moment and it wasn't overdone, right? Like if it's an episode where he's been talking for a long time, or if it's a Vex heavy episode where he's just always talking about shoving someone's intestines down their own throat, like you're just like, oh, for the like, I get it, like it's because it's the same joke with different dialogue, like it's never anything new, right? Whereas the kids are always making jokes, but they're always making jokes about being a fish out of water, but it's all new stuff, like
it's all fresh, yeah.
Yeah, like there's a situation in one of the episodes where they're encouraged to embrace their mistakes. So when a teacher tells Krell he's wrong, he gives her a hug.
Right.
And it's like really, really clever stuff, right?
A literal embrace, yeah. It was funny.
It was really, really funny. But that's the thing, is that they don't do that with Vex. It's the same shtick. It's like he wakes up and he's an Etch-a-Sketch and he just talks the same all the time. And same with the old man jokes where he's just like, he tries to do something and like, curse these old feeble knees. And it's endless. It's the same thing over and over again. It's like, guys, just come up with something new. And one of the reasons why it bothered me so much is that visually he is a cool character. Like he looks awesome.
And I thought it was a great juxtaposition in the later episode when they have some crossovers, when he and Arg meet each other.
Oh yes.
And they have that sort of rough but amicable kind of fighting back and forth, and you know, he yells glorious during that as well. I thought that was like a cool exchange back and forth.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, and I guess even that comparison right there, I thought, you look at these big strong warrior characters and you have Arg and Vex right next to each other, and Arg was done like 1,000% or more better than Vex in terms of character.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I agree. The Vex was definitely, definitely very cool looking. It had a lot of neat stuff going on about him. I just felt flat as a character until he starts to talk about his family. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. But like visually, there's a point in one of the last battles where he knows he's got the drop on a troll, and he kind of like leans in and grins, and it's a profile shot. So you really get the idea of like how little his face is compared to the rest of his head. And like, it's a really interesting dynamic that they go through. And Speaking of the fight scenes, I think that's probably one of the better things about the show. The way that everything is designed, it's very much like Tron. Like everything has got blue or red glowy bits. The aliens are made out of energy, which is I think was also a very clever way, because there's a lot of murder or talk of murder or fighting and people, characters dying, whether they're, you know, bad guys or assassins or whatever. But because they're all digital aliens, they disintegrate into pixels. Like they get deleted as opposed to dying. Like there's no, even though there's no blood, like there's no sword going through someone's chest and like the dying breath as they drift off. It's more like they kind of go, oh, and then poof, they're into, like they kind of float away, you know, into pixels, which I thought was really, really cool. And then their parents actually have royal cores, which I think is unique to the royal race or the royal lineage.
I don't think so, because they had Vex when he was talking about his family, and they do that flashback. He's holding the cores of his family in his hand. So
that's right.
I mean, I don't know if you may be right. Maybe if, because they weren't royal, they died and they were just dead.
Like the battery died, as opposed to royals being able to survive when there's just cores left. I don't know how that works.
Because at one point in the show, the parents were sort of. I think near the end, they had another flashback sequence where their parents were giving them, you know, their sort of royal education and speech, and you have this core, and as long as it's not destroyed, you can come back. And I don't, they didn't really get into whether that was unique, as you mentioned. Don't know if it was unique to them as royals, or if that was more of a, because you are this type of extraterrestrial, you know, I forget what they were.
And the thing is, like, there's two or three different alien looks on their planet. There's the royals, who all have four arms. They're the only characters with four arms. And that's why I feel like they might even be like a separate lineage, if not a separate race. But then
Acheridian Five, that's what it was.
Acheridian Five, yeah. And then which also gives the idea that there might be an Acheridian 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know.
True.
But then Vervatos, his build is very similar to like all the soldiers. Like they all kind of look the same, as if they're digitally designed for a purpose. Like the royals are designed to be this way, and then the soldiers are designed like Vex because that's intimidating and functional as a warrior. But then there's other characters, and one of them was voiced by Haley Atwell. Zadra, she's got the cool sickle. She's got the scythe, double-ended scythe weapon.
Agent Carter, right?
Yeah. It's voiced by Haley Atwell from Agent Carter. And she's a female character with two arms, but doesn't look like anybody else, and which is cool. Right. But then I didn't see any other female characters on the planet that looked like her, or looked like they kind of look like Aja, but with two arms. So that, like, it was hard to figure out whether there's two races, three races. Like, I couldn't really figure it out. If anything, I would say it's probably that there's not races, is that they're one race of beings, but then they have different purposes, and depending on their purpose, they look different. That's kind of how I kind of interpret it. But either way, there's just an awful lot of thought that goes into the production design, and because of how unique everything looks and the inspiration that they get from different things, it's really interesting to see how they move and how they fight. And it's a visual treat. Whenever there is a sword fight or a laser fight or any kind of battle, it's just fun. And it's over the top. Like, it's like Tron on steroids. Like, it's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm. Talking about the visual side of things, I mean, that's one thing I did like about, we talked about Vex already, but I don't know if you noticed, there was a translucency to his armor.
Yeah.
So sometimes when he would turn his head, you could almost see his chin that's sort of tucked below his armor.
Yep.
Go back and forth. I thought, oh, these little tiny subtle things that were really, really good.
Yeah, exactly. And the kind of things that would be impossible, just so labor intensive to pull off, you know, 10, 15 years ago in animation, even if it was CG, but like even like hand-drawn animation, forget it. Like that would be, you'd have to put like into a Disney feature film to get the budget to pull that off. But for television animation and the way that CG looks now, like you can do some very, very cool stuff. And they're doing it smart too. Like, I mean, the characters are fairly simple. The design aesthetic is very similar to like How to Train Your Dragon or, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Like, it's pretty cartoony. Everybody's got kind of skinny arms and skinny legs. It's all pretty, you know, and there's characters of different sizes and stuff, you know, like Toby from Trollhunters is a pretty round kid. But they still, they have a really, they put the money into things like the clothes and the textiles and when characters do flashy things. And so like it really makes those important scenes pop. I enjoyed the bounty hunters too. I thought they were pretty cool. There was one guy that was only in it for like a couple of seconds. He was dressed up as like a bunny rabbit or something. I can't remember what they called him. It was like, you know, Rabbitar or something like that. His name was Fufu. Right.
So we had a moment where we paused it, and then my wife and I looked at our boys. Do you remember that song?
Yeah.
Little bunny Fufu. And so we, you know, of course. Yeah.
But I thought it was great.
We sang the song to them.
Yeah. I thought it was great how they have this bounty hunter like named Fufu, and he's clearly a rabbit. Like but he's got armor that kind of goes up over his ears, and like, but everything is just like the silhouette is still very much a bunny rabbit, and it's just, but he's intimidating and people are afraid of him. Like, it's just,
yeah,
it's pretty spot on. And then, but the other characters too, like whenever there was other bounty hunters going after Aja and Krell, like because of how they're designed, you're just like, oh man, how does that character move? Like, she's got a tail. Is it a he? Is it a she? I don't know. It's voiced by a woman, but they don't really, they call everybody brother because it's a brotherhood of assassins. Right. Anyway, they really handled all that kind of stuff well. The only thing that I found dropped off for me as far as the animation goes, and this was also true of Trollhunter season 3, and that is anytime there was more subtle acting, conversations between characters, subtle conversations between what's the main kid on Trollhunters? I'm blanking.
Jim.
So between Jim and Claire, when they have like a romantic or a soft conversation that's important to the story, same thing with any of the stuff, like some of the close-up animation on Aja when she's in a human form. I found that when they were aliens, they were all very well done. But the human form animation, some of the more subtle stuff was really kind of watery, and they were just always moving, and it was very sort of formulaic. Like they were moving without purpose, you know, as opposed to like, and what I find as an animator is like that when I notice that kind of stuff, it's me thinking like, guys, it's okay to have a character hold. Like you can, when a character is not talking and they're just standing next to someone, you can just have them stay still. It's fine. And that to me, just speaks to some, you know, corner cutting, you know, trying to just, you know, get the stuff done as fast as possible. Looked it up, and sure enough, the animation was done overseas, whereas in Trollhunters season 1 and 2, I'm pretty sure it was not. So cheaper is not always better. And it sucks because I know that Trollhunters season 1 for sure, part of it was animated in Canada. I think season 2 as well, parts of it were also animated in Canada. So it sucks that, you know, when, you know, people that I know in the industry that are working on cool shows like this, and then when season 3 comes around, or the season 1 of a brand new show, and DreamWorks goes, it's cheaper to send it to India or China to get it done. You're like, really? Because it doesn't pay off. It shows that you, for lack of a better word, cheaped out, you know, and sent it overseas. And that's not to say that the whole show was. I would imagine all the stuff that, you know, you and I are like, this looks amazing, it was probably done at DreamWorks. Right. Whereas so key scenes, you know, the opening 2 episodes and the finale and all the big battle stuff was probably done in house. But then all the other, like, well, it's just talking heads, we'll just send it somewhere to get done. Well, send it to somewhere that knows what they're doing, because I certainly noticed the drop off. I was a little bit disappointed in that, because usually DreamWorks TV shows are quite good in terms of the animation quality.
Agreed. Yeah. No, it's funny, though. I mean, that's your specialty, you would have picked up on that, and I didn't. I'm usually pretty good at that, but I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah. Did I got a question for you? Given kind of like the appropriate age that your boys are, and how much you've enjoyed, you know, Trollhunters as a series and as a family, was the family at all sensitive to the amount of, like, you know, talk of death and killing and maiming and murder and stuff in Three Below?
I don't think so, because maybe it's because of their age, but it's also not a lot of it. actually came to fruition.
Right. It's all threats.
And so there wasn't all this talk and then, oh my goodness, that's exactly what they meant. And it just, and then, you know, then the body count starts to happen. It wasn't really like that. I mean, when they were younger, definitely there was more sensitivity around the notion of death. But I think as they got older, I mean, you know, I forget what point it was. There was something we watched where they weren't too sure about it. I think it was one of the Harry Potter movies and found Voldemort when he first showed up very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just said, look, he's just an actor. He's actually got a big nose. They took it off through CGI and it's like, look, here he is on IMDb. And look, he's been in these movies. He plays these different characters. And then they started to realize that it's a profession. They're right. Telling a story. And yeah. So, by contrast, we were, like, as I mentioned, we were working our way through the Marvel movies. We tried Iron Man 3 with them, and Ben Kingsley plays the, I forget what his character's name is, but essentially he's a terrorist type character.
Oh, yes.
And that's talking about killing and, you know, they're actors, but it's portraying real people, killing real people. And this, that doesn't sit well with them.
Hmm.
But because it's a story and they're animated and they're just talking about it,
yeah.
And the deaths that they do have, as we mentioned in Trollhunters, it's trolls crumbling to stone and dying. And in Three Below, it's digital aliens who are being, as you mentioned, sort of vaporized. But
yeah,
as we assumed that every one of them had a core that stayed alive.
Right.
And so they weren't necessarily dead. They were just.
Yeah. And that works for your favorite reset, villain too. Yeah. If one of the cool villains, you know, gets disintegrated, that doesn't necessarily mean they can't come back in some other form, you know, in season two or three. Like they did that with Transformers too. Like if the spark wasn't destroyed, then the Transformer could then, you know, scan somebody new and with enough energon come back as a different robot or something like that. They did that with Beast Wars a lot. You know, Optimus Primal was supposed to have died and then he came back with all these different parts and stuff like that that they can do. I was curious because I notice it more, and it might be just because I'm older and I've got friends that have kids or what, but I don't remember there being as much talk of like death and mayhem in cartoons when I was a kid, like particularly the villain from Three Below, the evil, general that took over their home planet and murdered their parents. He's, you know, always, you know, there's a lot of shots at the end of the shows, like we have to find the royals and kill them, and they hang on that sort of like word, and it's
yeah,
like, it really kind of hammers it home. I mean, all that said, I watched Star Wars when I was a kid, and Obi-Wan Kenobi got cut in half. And I mean, like, he didn't get cut in half visually, but he died, like, he died, you know, he wasn't coming back, and you didn't know that he was a ghost and that could still talk to Luke until the next movie, you know, like, it wasn't like he came back a few, you know, minutes later, all glowy and blue, and talked to people. I was just curious about it because it struck me as kind of a unique kind of take on it. But I don't think I have too much more to add. Like, I think I would highly recommend it. I mean, even if you stayed through some of these spoilers and know that there are some issues with the show, overall it was very good. Be in the mood for silly. If you go in open minded with it being an adventure cartoon with a lot of humor, then I think you'll come out the other side liking it quite a bit.
Yeah, and you mentioned as we chatted a little while ago that the voice acting in it, for the most part, is quite excellent.
Yes.
And I have to say, even Varvatos Vex, I actually liked the voice acting. I just felt like...
Oh, it's the writing.
He was a one-dimensional character, mm-hmm. but he's very cool. I like the way he sounds. And yeah, the dad blank and the mom blank.
Oh,
yeah. we won't get into spoil that too much, but these are sort of... two characters that are based on 50s mentality and quips and like sound bites from radio and stuff like that. And they are hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, spot on. Yeah. I'm looking it up right now, but I'm pretty sure Tom Kenny does the voice for Dad Blank. That's SpongeBob. Like that. He's the voice actor that does SpongeBob to give people kind of an idea of like the, like, I'm sure that it was a lot of writing, but I'm sure there was also some kind of like improv happening in the recording booth that they probably took advantage of. Yeah, Tom Kenny does the voice for SpongeBob. So he's got that kind of like 50s buzz to his voice, you know? Glenn Close is the voice of the mother computer, the mothership, which I think was also you recognize her voice immediately. Like there are some big name actors in this. Diego Luna plays Krell. He's one of the guys from Star Wars.
Rogue One.
Yeah, he's one of the main guys in Rogue One. Also, a very appealing voice. Like he's an easy actor to listen to.
Yeah, it's interesting. He does a young voice really well too, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm a huge fan of Tatiana Maslany, who plays Aja and Aja's mother actually, and she did Orphan Black. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I've not seen it, but I've heard nothing but good things.
She's phenomenal. She plays all of multiple characters, and she plays with various accents, and she plays characters trying to pretend to be the other character. So she's doing a mishmash of the accents that she's playing. And so she's quite good.
And that's something that I noticed right away after a couple of episodes, after watching the first two, I did look up the cast cause I was curious. And once I realized she was from Orphan Black, I was like, oh, that's why her accent actually sounds good and not a stereotype. Like whatever accent they went with for Aja, it sounds vaguely, you know, middle European, like Western Europe, you know, that kind of thing. And kind of like Czech, that's, you know, Russian a little bit. I'm sure she probably mashed a couple things together and came up with her own, but it doesn't sound like a cartoon accent. Like it just sounds like a foreign accent, which I think was really cool. Luna just talks in his own voice, but maybe with a little bit of a falsetto to come younger, but he's got a Spanish accent anyway, so that was good. A bit of Transformers trivia since I brought it up. Frank Welker, the voice of Megatron, classic Megatron, is the voice of Lug, the dog, which is nothing but like snot noises. Excuse me. Man, I'm still getting over a cold myself. But yeah, it is. Actually, you know what? The sound in the show is really quite good. You know, all the buzzes and whistles and all the different noises that their apparatus make. And it's really, really fun. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you. Patreon is a great way for you to support this podcast directly. If you get value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. It is completely up to you. To support the show, go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Pledging at any level will give you an invite to our patron-only Discord chat. And there are now multiple levels with different rewards like Discord roles and bonus episodes. And fun fact, we talked about Lego so much over the holiday break in the Discord chat that we gave it its own channel. So now there's just a ton of really cool things happening. And we're kind of getting to the point where we have to kind of segment things away. Minecraft already had its own channel that we don't put everybody under the Minecraft microscope. there's a few of us that really enjoyed it, and that's in its own channel too. But I checked at the beginning of the show, and we are kicking off 2019 with 13 patrons. My goal is always to have one more patron each month than the previous month. So are you going to be patron number 14? I don't know. Let's find out in February. For a little bit of context, the last time I bought a latte at Starbucks, it was $5.60. So for less than that, for less than a latte a month, you can help support independent podcasting like this one. And my pick this week is something that I have already talked about a little bit on the Spunchunks with my buddy Johnny. It's called Hytale. It's a new game from Hypixel Studios. Hypixel is probably most famous for their Minecraft server mini games. Steven, I'm sure your boys are probably aware of Hypixel.
Yeah.
And Hytale is a voxel-based adventure game that's coming new, and it looks like Minecraft, very much so, in that everything is made out of cubes. But it looks like, you know, obviously a modern version. There looks to be a lot more story. The website promises building mini games and adventure modes, and there look to be a lot of heavy RPG elements. So are you and the boys aware of Hytale? Like, has this been something that's been buzzing around the house?
Oh yeah. No, especially my older guy. We play, it's one of the servers we go on most actually is Hypixel, because they've got a small game that I've gotten actually pretty good at. So they can actually, daddy can keep up with the two boys in Minecraft on this server. And, so my guys are there all the time checking stuff out, and they've got different ranks that they've purchased on the site. And so, of course, the day it came out, the trailer for it dropped on Hypixel, they were all over it.
It looks really cool. And I have to say, as someone that has been learning to do a little bit of JavaScript modification and getting under the hood of Minecraft and making my own textures and trying to learn how to do some models, but it's more difficult than I thought. Hytale kind of does what I want to do with Minecraft, but can't. You know, like your swords have got, you can craft different swords. It looks like there might be a mage class and a warrior class and a, you know, a rogue class that you can have, like, you know, bows and arrows and have ranged weapons and things like that. There's armor. A lot of the mobs, like a lot of the bad guys that they show in the Hypixel or the Hytale trailer are really cool. Like, they remind me of the kind of things that you'd see from a World of Warcraft trailer. Like, it's a flaming dog with horns and hooves, and or it's a giant ogre that's, like, you know, as tall as a tree, and the kind of stuff that you just don't get in Minecraft with cube zombies and creepers that are kind of like waddling after you. It seems like it's taking it to the next level. We had a lengthy discussion about Hytale on this week's episode of the Spawn Chunks, episode 21. So you can check that out at spawnchunks.com. But also check out the Hytale trailer. You can find it at hytale.com. That's Hytale. And there's lots of details about the game. And something that I was pleasantly surprised by is that they're developing it for both Mac and PC.
Very cool.
Yeah, normally when I see new games like this, especially things that are, I don't want to say indie, because Hytale and Hypixel Studios, they're a pretty big deal. But normally when you see these new games being developed, they're very often for just PC, not Mac, and it's nice to see them developing it for Mac as well. And before we move on, I want to make one quick little recommendation, and that is for a program called Magic of Voxel. With all this voxel-based gaming and stuff circling around, I was looking into some different things, and Magic of Voxel is a free, lightweight, 8-bit voxel art editor. So it's an art tool, it's not a game, but I mean, when they say lightweight, they are not kidding. This thing loads faster than anything I have on my Mac. It's like a one-click, bam, you're in.
Cool.
Oh man, it is intuitive. Granted, I am an artist and I have done some 3D in my life, but you know, it's learning a new software. It's, you know, you have to get the hotkeys. You have to try to find some YouTube tutorials. And I can recommend actually one person. His name is Aaron Robbins, and I'll link that in the show notes as well. He's one of the few people on YouTube that is giving tutorials in Magic of Voxel in a way that are digestible and not like hyperactive and annoying. And
Yeah.
they're well, and people, unfortunately, they'll, you know, it's YouTube, so they'll label as a tutorial, but it's a time lapse. And it's like, well, I can't really see what you're doing when it's 800 times faster than you actually did it in real life. But these are short. He does kind of some shorter videos. He also has some longer ones where he actually talks about how you take the models that you make in Magic of Voxel and you translate them into a game engine like Unity and actually animate them. And I thought that was really cool as well. But I spent 10 minutes in it, and just having played Minecraft and having that kind of like knowledge, I built a little tower, like a little castle tower, in 10 minutes.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, it was Minecraft scale, which you don't have to stick to, right? So I was thinking about a person being, you know, like 2 blocks tall. But in this, you wouldn't necessarily want to go that way. Might want to go to a larger, you know, resolution, like say like 32 pixels, you know, per square sort of thing. But it's fun. It's easy to render stuff out. You can make stuff glow. You can make stuff look like glass. I'll have a link to it in the show notes, and I'll send you a link as well, because I think you and the guys, the boys would probably really like to
Yeah.
mess around with it. It's a
Yes,
lot.
please.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And because it's free and it's an independent developer, like, it's not perfect, but it's really good for something that you don't have to pay even a couple of dollars for. So yeah, I think it's worth mentioning.
Very cool.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find more info about this show and all the things that Steven and I talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. The music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe on your favorite podcast app. That includes iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. Share the show with everyone you know. Word of mouth is an easy and free way to support the show. Just tell folks, hey, this was cool, you should listen to it, and then tell them where to go. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. I am available for hire right now, so if you've got some freelance work you'd like to get taken care of, then drop me a line. Don't forget to check out my other podcasts, Comics Coast to Coast and The Spawn Chunks, and you can follow me online on Twitch, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube with just my name, Joel Duggan. Steven, is there anywhere you want to point people online, or we can just say, hey, just go watch Three Below?
I'd say go watch Three Below. I mean, I don't, I'm taking mini hiatus from social media these days, so you could go follow me, but there won't be anything new or exciting there. So
smart.
Check out Three Below. Yeah, overall, very, very, very fun show.
Spend less time on Twitter, more time with your family or watching Netflix and exactly. Watching cartoons. Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea too. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two or three below.